tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday, the 19th of February, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, normally we would have Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson with us today, but unfortunately he's been taken off into hospital again. Listeners will be aware that last week he went in for a procedure on his heart, and they discovered that there was nothing blocking up his arteries, which is good news. So he didn't need to have any stents put into his heart. But the problem was, it didn't actually tell us what the underlying cause of the health issues is. And he thought that he was going to get better over the week, but he's gradually got worse, and he's had to go back into the hospital yesterday. I mean, hopefully they will eventually find out what it is and they will be able to help him. But unfortunately, he's not able to be here today. Grandpa Dan will be with us tomorrow, and we're thinking about having a look at the American healthcare system as well, because Dr. Johnson's experience with it is quite different to Grandpa Dan's experience. Dr. Johnson does have health insurance, so thankfully he is getting the best healthcare he can. Grandpa Dan had issues with affording the healthcare insurance, and he's got some horror stories to tell, because we often hear about how bad European healthcare is because it's nationalized healthcare that's provided by the state. And we often hear people, politicians, particularly in America, talking about how great the American healthcare system is, but Grandpa Dan doesn't think it's that good, and so we may well be discussing that tomorrow. But today, I thought I would still have a look at a geopolitical issue. We're going to take a look at Libya today, because there's a new United Nations report that has just come out talking about Libya and the state of Libya. And of course, if we look back to, I think it was around 2010, 2011, something around about that time, before the problems in Syria, there was an American and EU and Israel sponsored uprising in Libya, and they decided it was necessary to provide a no-fly zone over Libya, which meant basically bombing all the airports, making it impossible for the military to stop the uprising. And we were told that this was essential for democracy. And these Libyan rebels, who turned out to be ISIS, massacred lots of people. They butchered Gaddafi. They sodomized Gaddafi. We had Hillary Clinton saying, "We came, we saw, he died," and cackling with glee at the fact that another world leader had been brutally tortured to death in such a horrific way. And then we had David Cameron and Sarkozy, and I think even Merkel might have gone out there as well. We had all of these EU leaders going out to Libya and talking about how great it was and how Libya was now going to be a thriving democracy and would be joining the rest in the West. And of course, Libya had already joined the rest in the West. Libya had got rid of its nuclear weapons on the proviso that something like that would not happen. And of course, this is why Kim Jong-un will never get rid of his nuclear weapons, because he knows what will happen. The same thing will happen to him as happened to Gaddafi. So we apparently brought democracy to Libya, which in essence meant that there were then two governments. You had a government in Benghazi and you had a government in Tripoli, both claiming to be the actual legitimate government of Libya. And ever since then, it's been a complete basket case. And we've heard about slavery there. We've heard about mass killings. We know that a lot of the illegal immigrants are getting to Europe through Libya, whereas before Gaddafi stopped all of that. And Gaddafi's Libya was actually a very good place to live. If you look it up, even on Google, if you look up on AI and you ask about Libya, it says, before the 2011 uprising, Libya was Africa's largest oil producer with significant wealth, high living standards, and extensive infrastructure development. Often cited for having the continent's highest human development index at the time, its economy was driven by oil, providing a high gross domestic product per capita. And of course, all of that money Gaddafi spent on the Libyan people and also on the rest of the continent of Africa. And as soon as these troubles began, America and the West impounded the Libyan sovereign wealth fund, literally billions of dollars there that were made from nationalizing the oil industry that was supposed to be for Libya and for the Libyans. As far as I'm aware, it's never been given back to them. And that money was distributed amongst the people in lots of different ways. When you got married, the state gave you the equivalent of $50,000. You would be given a pickup truck. You'd be given a house. When Gaddafi came into office after his Green Revolution, a lot of the people there were still living in tents. And he made certain that everybody lived in a house. And it wasn't until everybody was housed, he actually put his mother in a house. And I believe she was in a tent up until that point. And he was looked upon, although he was responsible for some terrorism as well, he was looked upon as another nationalist leader by some nationalists in the West. I can remember reading his Green Book back in 2010, 2011, because it was a nationalist book written by a nationalist leader, which is why he tried to do his best for the Libyan people. If you were bright and somebody showed that they had the aptitude and they were female, he would pay for them to go to Europe to study at a European university. And he'd also pay for male chaperones. He would pay for them to take their brothers with them to protect them. I mean, it's not like he oppressed his people in any way. And they even have to admit that here in this AI answer. It says key aspects of pre-2011 Libya. Number one, economic strength. Oil accounted for 95% of export earnings and 25% of GDP. Number two, infrastructure. The country undertook the Great Man-Made River Project, the world's largest water development scheme to supply water to coastal areas. They literally turned the desert into lush farmland. Three, stability and development. Under Muammar Gaddafi, Libya boasted a high life expectancy, high literacy rates, and social safety nets, distinguishing it from many other African nations at the time. While the Switzerland of Africa analogy highlights the country's high living standards and relative wealth during that era, Libya was also noted for its authoritarian, central planning, and highly personalized political system. Since 2011, Libya has been characterized by intense political instability and conflict brought on them by the West. And of course, as I say, all the migrants that are making their way into Europe are passing through Libya first, and Gaddafi didn't allow any of that. There was nobody that was coming across from Libya to Spain at the time when Gaddafi was in power. He prevented all of that. In fact, one of the, and he wasn't nasty to the black Africans either. I mean, one of the criticisms that there was of him was by the Arab population of Libya. And they thought that he was being too good to the sub-Saharan Africans because he would provide them with work. He would get them to come in from neighbouring Chad and other African countries and get them to work in the industry that they had there. And some of the Arabs weren't particularly happy about him favouring these black Africans because Libya was an Arab country. Gaddafi was an Arab. But he also saw that he was responsible for the sub-Saharan Africans. So he did help them. But at the same time, he also prevented them from getting in boats and trying to make it to Spain. Libya was not a hub for migration like it is today. And as I say, I'm bringing this up today because there's a UN report on this, and I'm taking this from Breitbart. UN report, migrants passing through Libya suffer killings, torture, rape, and slavery. And that is the end result of the no-fly zone that we initiated over Libya. And I can remember at the time, Putin refused to allow this. He voted against this. He said this would just destroy Libya. And all the other world leaders ignored him. And in fact, they overrode him. You know, I think if someone on the UN Security Council votes against something, they have a veto vote, and they just ignored that. Ignored Putin refusing to vote along with them. And they went in there and destroyed the country. And the people that they sent in there to destroy the country, after they had destroyed Libya, they went to Syria and they became ISIS in Syria. And at the time, even in Britain, Britain was offering money. I forget how much money it was. It might have been $2,000 a week. And this was being offered in the mosques of Britain for people to go out and fight against Muammar Gaddafi. So there was this sort of tacit support for the Libyan rebels, who then became Syrian rebels, who then became ISIS. I mean, these were jihadis, basically. And Britain was responsible for putting these jihadis in Libya. And once they'd taken over Libya, one of these jihadis then sued Britain for putting him in jail. And of course, Britain put him in jail because he was an Islamic extremist. But because he went over and fought in Libya against Gaddafi, that sort of cleared his name. And then he was able to sue Britain for putting him in jail. Anyway, the Office of the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, the OHCHR, published a report on Tuesday that found patterns of human rights violations and abuses perpetrated with impunity against migrants, asylum seekers, and refugees in Libya, including torture, murder, sexual violence, and human trafficking. Of course, none of this was going on when Gaddafi was running the place. The report, titled Business as Usual and co-authored with the UN Support Mission in Libya, found that migrants are forcibly rounded up, abducted, separated from their families, arbitrarily arrested and detained, and transferred without due process to a mixture of official, unofficial, or illegal detention facilities. The migrants and their families are often forced to pay ransom to secure their release. And this is really the same sort of thing that was going on hundreds of years ago. What would happen is the Arabs would come out in their ships to Europe. They'd beach the ships on the shore. They'd just run up the shore, grab as many white people as they could that they thought they could get money for, women, young men, put them all on the ship, take them back to North Africa. And then these Christians, because they were Christians, they would be pressured to become Muslims. If they became Muslims, then they couldn't be enslaved anymore. They remained Christian. And then the Arabs demanded a ransom for them. And we had these very brave and noble Christian men that would collect money in Britain or in Europe. And then they would travel over to North Africa and pay the ransom on these slaves and give them manumission, essentially buy these slaves back. So what they were doing is they were kidnapping people and then holding them to ransom. And it's exactly the same thing that's going on in Libya today. They're just grabbing these migrants that come through there to try and get to Europe. And before they make their way to Europe, they get captured by the Libyan authorities, and then their families have to pay a ransom for them. So it's a very similar policy to what was going on years ago. The title of the report was derived from the way this system of exploitation has become a brutal and normalized reality, woven from deliberate, profit-driven practices that together form a ruthless and violent business model. The UN said these horrors are perpetrated by organized networks with ties to state actors, but also made room to slam European countries for allegedly turning Libya into a warehouse for would-be immigrants and refugees with their restrictive migration policies. Well, the thing is, if Europe did not have any migration policy and said, we're not allowing these people in at all, if they set foot on our shores, they will be returned to Africa, they wouldn't come, would they? But because we put them in hotels and we give them healthcare, I mean, it was only just released this week that a migrant, an illegal asylum seeker, had actually been given transgender surgery on the NHS. So we're giving them medical care that they would never get in Africa. We're putting them up in hotels. We're treating them like kings. They've got basically, they've got private healthcare. They've got doctors on call all the time if they want to go anywhere. There's a private chauffeur that will drive them around either in a bus or in a taxi. This is not going to deter people from trying to come to Europe when they're living in Africa with nothing. They just look to Europe as the promised land. It's not the fact that we say, well, you can't come in here illegally, but if you do, we'll put them in a hotel. That's not a restrictive migration policy. A restrictive migration policy would be to say you're not coming in at all, or you'll go back to Africa. And if you do come in, we're just going to stick you in prison. And they've broken the law. That would deter the migration. But because we don't do that, they come into Europe. And the UN is blaming Europe effectively for what is now happening in Libya. And Europe is to blame because we bombed Gaddafi. But that isn't what they're saying here. They're saying Europe is to blame because we're not allowing these Africans to just get on their boats and come straight into Europe. And of course, that would destroy Europe. The implication is that Europe could alleviate the problem by opening its borders to endless migration across the Mediterranean, and thus draining the pool of potential victims for Libyan kidnappers and rapists. So we should just allow the kidnappers and the rapists to come here then. I mean, it's not like the Libyans themselves are particularly different from the rest of the people in Africa. Kidnapping and rape and slavery goes on all over most of the countries in Africa, particularly in South Africa, even in places that were given a first world civilization to start off with, have turned it into a hellhole. And if we allow them into Britain and into Europe, that's what they'll turn Europe into. The report still acknowledged that most of the problem is caused by misgovernance in Libya, as I say, that's caused by Europe, by all of the many factions and governments jostling for control of the country since the ouster and death of dictator Muammar Gaddafi in 2011, even though Libya is a long-standing signatory to treaties against slavery, torture and arbitrary detention. Well, of course, they don't care what Gaddafi signed. Why should they bother to go along with that? And Gaddafi was voted in. I'm sure he did have democracy. They did have elections, and the people really supported him. They massively supported him. And why wouldn't you when somebody did so much for the country as he did? Unfortunately, Libya has no specific laws against human trafficking and grants no special status to refugees or asylum seekers. Well, why do we grant them special status then? If they're not granted special status in Africa, why should we grant them special status in Britain? Even if it did, the fractured country would have a difficult time enforcing such regulations. Well, it says here they have no specific laws against human trafficking, but slavery was supposed to be outlawed all around the world. But it wasn't until after the year 2000, I think it might have been Mauritania, one of those African countries actually made slavery illegal. And apparently what they're saying here, Libya has no laws against human trafficking. I'm assuming, well, perhaps that means Libya doesn't have any laws against slavery then, because they do have slave markets there. You know, the bizarre thing is that we'll have people over here claiming, oh, we need to pay black Africans reparations for them being enslaved 200 years ago, as if white people invented slavery. And in Africa today, they still have slavery, and the black Africans are still enslaving black Africans, and they're doing that in Libya. And that's what this report shows. Instead, Libya has a harsh ban on illegally entering the country, which states that violators can be fined, deported, or penalised by detention with hard labour. A large number of migrants find themselves in the hands of armed groups that decide to go with a third option. Again, this shows you that they will take a massive risk to try and get to Europe. They take the risk of being fined, deported, or being kidnapped and forced to engage in hard labour by Libya, but they'll still take that risk to come to Europe because they know that they will be let into Europe. If we didn't let them into Europe, they wouldn't try and break into Libya, and it would deprive these corrupt Libyans from being able to abuse these people in such a way. So it doesn't just cause problems for Europeans by us allowing this to go on. It causes problems for Libya, the country itself is trying to sort itself out, and it has a constant stream of sub-Saharan Africans making their way through it. And as I say, they try to deal with it. They'll stick them in prison. They'll give them hard labor. They'll try to deter them. But if you've got people that are prepared to die to make it to Europe, and that's what these sub-Saharan Africans are, they're prepared to die. And this is why they will get in those boats that they know might sink, because they don't care if they die. They would rather die with a chance of actually making it to Europe than stay in Africa. That's the magnet. That's what you're actually dealing with here. So you're not going to be able to stop them unless you say, well, they've got no chance whatsoever. And then they wouldn't die in the boats. They wouldn't drown in the boats. They wouldn't be abused trying to make their way through Libya. They would have to try and make their own homeland habitable, wouldn't they, if we didn't allow them into Europe? Libya is also the jumping-off point for treacherous seaborne migration to coastal Europe. International media largely lost interest in stories of people drowning while trying to cross the Mediterranean after European powers began opening their borders a decade ago. But many migrants are still dying, including children. And I don't see the mainstream media losing interest in stories of people drowning. Perhaps we don't hear so much about people drowning off the coast of Libya, but we certainly hear about them drowning in the Channel and trying to make their way into Greece from Turkey. We still hear about them. And as I say, all of those deaths would be avoided if we just made it clear that they would not be getting in, that they would be sent to jail and then they would be deported from the prison to a country in Africa. That's the way to deal with this. That would stop all of this. The report noted that the Mediterranean remains one of the deadliest migratory routes in the world, with 33,348 deaths and disappearances reported since 2014. And it says here, which is right around the time global media stopped caring about children getting killed on risky migrant boats. And that's nonsense. They are constantly trying to guilt trip the West into allowing these people into Europe, because if we don't let them in, they will drown. I mean, that's a hell of a lot of drowning deaths, isn't it? 33,000 deaths. And yet these people are still prepared to risk dying, drowning in you know, at a very, very high risk of drowning. And yet they're prepared to risk that to come into Europe. So how are you going to stop people that are prepared to die to achieve their aim? Well, you have to make it clear that their aim is not going to be achieved. All the while we put them up in hotels, they are going to be willing to risk being killed, aren't they? If they knew that they would just be sent to prison and then they would be returned to the country they came from, they wouldn't come. Seagoing migrants who do not die are often returned to the coast of Libya, where they fall prey to the machinery designed to exploit them. The UN report noted that ocean interceptions performed by Libyan actors were particularly dangerous, including hazardous manoeuvres and excessive use of force. The Libyan Coast Guard has also been known to fire on humanitarian vessels attempting to rescue migrants at sea. See, Libyans don't want these people making their way through Libya either. Their way of deterring it is to fire on them. These people that are trying to get over here, they're willing to risk all of this to try and get to Britain. And yet Britain says, oh, we're going to go after these gangs. We're going to do X, Y, and Z. But they won't actually stop them from coming in. They won't actually say, well, look, if you try to break into the country, first you'll be detained in prison and then you'll be sent back to Libya or you'll be sent back to some other country in Africa. Then they wouldn't come, would they? It's because they expect to be put up in a hotel. They expect to have everything done for them. They expect to be able to appeal and to be allowed to live here until the appeal is actually heard, in which case they can just disappear somewhere. They shouldn't have the option of appealing. I'm not saying we should treat them in the same way that Libya does, but the fact that Libyans will shoot on them and they very often drown, it shows you that what we actually have in Europe is a massive magnet to them. And it also really shows you that non-whites that complain about racism in Europe, they should really think about what it would be like if they were in Africa or in the countries that they actually came from. And yet they'll still try to get to Europe, even though it's supposedly full of racism. And yet they're prepared to die to actually get there. So it really says that this fear of the horrors of racism really isn't anything at all, is it? Because they would rather have that than actually live in their own homelands. The UN accused Libyan authorities of sometimes deporting rejected migrants by tossing them into the Sahara Desert without much in the way of supplies. Migrants with enough money to pay bribes were frequent targets of extortion. And see, even doing this doesn't stop them. They'll still try and make their way through Libya, even though they know they'll just get dropped off in the Sahara Desert. I mean, it's harsh, but why should the Libyan authorities be responsible for these people? They're not responsible for them. People are responsible for themselves. They make their own decisions. And if they're going to break into a country, they really should be prepared to be treated as an invader that has broken into the country. They should be prepared to be shot at, to be honest. But we don't do that because we're humane. And I guess the Libyans will say, well, at least we didn't shoot at them. We just returned them to where they came from, which was the edge of the Sahara Desert. The UN report was critical of European governments, what a surprise, for both formally and informally relying on partnerships with Libyan entities to control migration, although it is not clear what alternative they have in the absence of a strong and responsible central Libyan government. Well, I'm not sure we actually have deals with Libya, do we? We don't ever hear of returning migrants to Libya. We had the plan of returning them to Rwanda, but the problem with that was that it was sold to us as this is a way to punish them. This will deter them from coming. And it shouldn't have been. It should have been sold as this is an African country, so it's close to, very, very close culturally to where these people have actually come from. They'll get business loans while they're there. They'll get medical help. Rwanda actually wants people to come there, whether they are asylum seekers or not, whether they're economic migrants. They're people that are very close ethnically to the people that are coming over here. I mean, it could have been sold as this is a good thing. This will be a good thing for these refugees to go there and build a new life there. But instead, it was sold to the British public as, oh, this will deter them from coming and this will be like a punishment to them. When you actually see the properties that they were going to be living in, it wasn't a punishment at all. But because that was the way that it was sold to the British people, Labour were able to put a stop to it. But I mean, that is the answer, is just sending them back to another African country. And the African country that takes them will do well out of the deal. As I say, that they would get help for actually doing this. It would benefit Britain and it would also benefit the African country. OHCR found major hubs for human trafficking in Tobruk, Benghazi and Ajdabiya, where some of the most notorious illegal detention facilities, apparently affiliated with military actors in the East, are located. Rescue operations have removed malnourished and diseased women and children from these facilities. Just look at the horror that we actually cause by allowing these people into Europe. I mean, it's because of that that people try to get into Europe. It's because they try to get into Europe that they end up diseased and malnourished in Libya as they try to make their way through Libya. Libyan traffickers have allegedly formed partnerships with slavers in Sudan. Some of their victims are forced into prostitution or used as forced labourers, while others are held for ransom, with cash demands ranging from $500 to over $10,000 in American currency. Some of the captives are forced to pay their own ransoms by spending months and years as forced labourers. Others are tortured or sexually abused to incentivize their families to meet ransom demands. So that's slavery. That's open slavery that is going on there. And yet we don't hear about that. We just hear about how evil the white people are for enslaving black people. Well, here you have black people still enslaving black people, still charging ransoms for them, still doing exactly what North Africa was doing 300-400 years ago when it was taking people from Europe and enslaving them and selling them on to Arabs in Arabia, in the Middle East, as well as in North Africa, Libya, like here, and Morocco, and Tunisia. The report found that even some migrants who find accommodations and work in Libya are victimized by government officials as they face arbitrary arrest and abuse while in police custody. Accountability for such abuses remains extremely limited, with authorities either unwilling or unable to pursue accountability measures for gross violations of international human rights law, the report said. Only a small number of criminal proceedings have been initiated against alleged perpetrators. Well, what a surprise. We've destroyed the country and now there's no legal system in place and nobody obeys the human rights that we obey over here in the West. OHCHR concluded that Libya's restrictive approaches to migration, which prioritise deterrence over the protection of migrants, combined with the absence of adequate, safe and regular migration pathways, the criminalisation of irregular entry, stay and exit, and a lack of alternatives to detention, were sustaining a human rights catastrophe. It is a human rights catastrophe, and at the root of it is Europe allowing these people in. We say we don't allow them in, but we do. Once they get here, they can appeal. We put them up in hotels. If they get into Greece, they put them on an island there, and then they make their way from an island into Italy. One of the European countries takes them, and then they travel from that European country all the way to the north, and they end up in Sweden or Germany, or they end up in Britain. Hungary doesn't have this problem. Hungary doesn't allow them in at all. If they get into Hungary, they will just be expelled. And nobody tries to get into Hungary, do they? And there is no human rights catastrophe caused by migrants trying to get into Hungary. But there is a human rights catastrophe with migrants travelling through Libya trying to get to Northern Europe. The report also blamed pervasive discrimination, racism and xenophobia for keeping migrants out of the legitimate Libyan labour pool and denying them access to even minimal social services. And again, this is what I was pointing out about Gaddafi. He was criticised for helping the sub-Saharan Africans because Libya is an Arab country, basically. And there is racism between Arabs and sub-Saharan Africans. And the Arabs there didn't want the sub-Saharans in the labour pool at all. And that's the same thing that's going on now. And it's far worse now than it ever was under Gaddafi. So bombing Gaddafi has increased the racism and the xenophobia and the mistreatment of sub-Saharan Africans in Africa, where they did used to get social services. And as it says here, they're denied access to even minimal social services. Since reform is unlikely to flow organically from Libya's fractured systems of government, the UN and the international community has a responsibility to ensure that the protection of the rights of migrants is taken seriously, especially those members of the international community who have bilateral agreements with Libyan officials. How can you have an agreement with a Libyan official when there are two different groups that claim to be the legitimate government of Libya? You've got one lot that's based in Benghazi and you've got another lot that's based in Tobruk. I would say that the legitimate government of Libya might as well be Saif Gaddafi. And Saif Gaddafi was assassinated, I believe, the other day, or at least he died the other day. And that was Gaddafi's son. I mean, it's very, very sad what's been done to Libya. They just literally destroyed the place. And the end result is far worse mistreatment of sub-Saharan Africans than ever happened before. And we have this constant stream of them coming across from Africa into Europe. Nothing's being done about it. It's caused problems for the Libyans that are trying to sort their systems of government out and are trying to sort their country out. They can't do it because there's floods of sub-Saharan Africans making their way through all the time. You have to remove the incentive that there is for these Africans to come to Europe. And the only way to do that is to say, look, if you break into Europe, you will be jailed and then you will be sent back to Africa. And what they could do is they could say to Libya, look, we'll give you funding, we'll help you sort your country out and just put them in prison there. We'll send them back to you. You can put them in prison there. And then when they tell you which country they are actually coming from, then you can let them out and facilitate them to go back to their own country. But you have to have a deterrent to deter people from trying to break into the country, the same as you have a deterrent to prevent people from breaking into other people's homes and stealing all their possessions. You have a deterrent. People get sent to prison. If people try to break into Europe, they should be the same thing. There should be a deterrent. They shouldn't be rewarded. I mean, these people expect to be rewarded, and it's a massive reward to them. You can tell how big a reward it is to them by all the risks that they're willing to undergo, that the threat of drowning, the threat of being killed or enslaved, making their way through Europe. We might take it for granted that we have everything that we have here. We have a roof over our heads. We have a social safety net. We might complain about it, but it's still 100,000 times better than what life in Africa is like for these Africans. So, of course, they're going to take these massive risks. If they think they've got even the slimmest chance of getting into Europe, they're going to take these risks. That's what they've shown us. So we have to take away that slim chance. And then you wouldn't get them trying to break into Europe. You wouldn't get them trying to break into Libya. You wouldn't get them mistreated, and you wouldn't get them drowned. That's the simple answer, not the left answer of just, oh, well, just open up the borders and allow them to flood in, because they'll just turn Europe into Africa. It's very, very sad what's happened to Libya. Anyway, and this article here I just found hiding away on Breitbart's news site. It doesn't seem to have been really picked up on by anyone. And I thought we'd bring it up today because we've covered Libya here at Radio Albion, really, since it happened. It was shortly after the collapse of Libya and the start of the campaign against Syria when Radio Albion started. And, of course, we do hope that Matt is well and they find out what's troubling him at the hospital, and we'll keep you informed of that, of course. Thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Grandpa Dan. God bless and hail victory.